Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. As everyone knows, I love doing this podcast, and it's always something different, and today is no exception. I am joined by Ryan Mendel, a grad student. She's well on her way into a career in genetic counseling. She has done more work in mitochondrial research than I could have ever imagined, and she isn't even through her master's program yet. She has such a bright future. She's going to provide so much great support and knowledge and empathy for all rare disease families and maybe some in the mitochondrial community down the road. So I am so excited to welcome you, Ryan, to our podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Marcy. Hi. No, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to talk with you today.
Great, great. Well, I think talking to someone like you provides hope and insight into kind of where rare disease treatment and counseling is going. You know, it's hard for me sometimes personally even to keep hope when I've been diagnosed for 20 years and I still don't have a treatment, you know? So when I talk to someone young and fresh and energized with the idea of helping those in the rare disease community, to me, that's like a huge win. Like, what's better? Like, what could be better than you? Right. So, and you're also really easy to talk to. So I'm so happy to have you.
One of my strengths is talking. So I'm very excited for today.
Well, between the two of us, guys, I promise this won't be a 2-hour episode. So I think the best way to really kick it off is to just for you to talk about how you got to where you are today. You know, take us through the last few years, starting with like your unique opportunities in high school and like how you kind of came to be you today.
Yeah, I am from New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. I was very, very lucky in high school. I always loved science. I thought I wanted to be a marine biologist for a while. I thought I wanted to be a doctor for a while, kind of always in the science field, but not quite settling on one thing. And then in high school, I had the opportunity to actually take a genetics course. And not a lot of high schools offer that.
I've never heard of this until we spoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I was incredibly, incredibly lucky. I had loved the genetics portion of my AP biology class, and we did a bioethics portion. They used like my sister's keeper as an example, talking about, you know, having a sibling as a donor and things of that nature. And I was kind of hooked from there. So when I took the genetics class, I found out about genetic counseling. And from there, I was kind of full steam ahead. So after I graduated high school, I went to the College of New Jersey and I majored in biology and minored in statistics. I was really focused on genetics then. I did research on C. elegans and doing genetic modeling for that. And I also did a lot of community work. So I was involved in a community service organization. In college, I was president of the organization. We did a lot of community outreach in Trenton with the children. And I was also a direct support professional for adults with autism. So when I was home on breaks, I was working in the schools and I was a classroom aide in autism classrooms. And then I also worked with the adults when I was back up at school. I loved being, you know, involved in the research as well as with the people directly. And that's kind of what genetic counseling does, is it helps tie the genetics and the science that I like with the research and also the people. I took a couple years off after college. So I knew I wanted to do genetic counseling. I knew I needed a master's, but I really wanted to spend some years doing research. And I got super lucky that there was a position open at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in their mitochondrial medicine frontier program. And that's where I first got exposed to mito. So that was in 2021. I worked under Dr. Marnie Falk in her lab, and I specifically worked on single large-scale mitochondrial DNA deletion syndromes. So SLSMIDs for short, because that'll be painful to repeat very often. But I worked on a philanthropic grant from the CHAMP Foundation.
Yeah, we featured the GEM Foundation on our podcast. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. They're so kind. Elizabeth is fantastic. But yes, so I worked on a 2-year grant from them to do drug therapy development for Sleissmans. So I did a lot of high throughput screening of over 500 compounds to try and identify potential therapies for Sleissmans using the C. elegans model as well as cells.
Wow. So I'm just curious, were you familiar with mitochondrial disease before you went into this program at CHOP?
No.
Okay.
So I think everybody's like generic understanding of mitochondria is exactly what I had too going in.
Like one question on the biology test, what does the mitochondria do?
Yes. It is maternally inherited. Okay, I know that. Like, you know, it has its own DNA. Like I knew all of the very generic basics, but I was already always interested in rare disease, and having a rare disease opening, I was really hopeful that I'd be able to enter in because CHOP has their own mitochondrial clinic.
Yeah.
So they have their clinical research team as well as I was on the laboratory research team, but they're so kind there and so generous that I was able to join in on patient appointments as well as being at the bench, you know, looking at worms every day, but then also being able to see and talk to the patients.
I can see that your skill set, or I can hear that your skill set is great in the research department, but I think it would be such a tragedy for you to not be out talking with patients and being with families.
Yeah. And I think that's one of my favorite parts of genetic counseling is it's a very unique health profession where we really are for the patient, you know? We are emphasizing that it is the patient's decision, that we are there for the patient's education. That's very different from being a doctor or like in another space in the medical field. I like that I get to be an advocate for patients.
So, that's lovely. I wish more people would say that, right? But it sounds like your work was so interesting and you did it at such a young age, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was the sole researcher on that project.
Wow.
So I had to understand a lot of different assays very quickly. And I also interpreted all the data myself. So I'd run the experiments. I'd prep the drugs. I'd actually go through and analyze the data and then present it. So I really got to go through every step of the proposal to the experiments, to the data analysis, to presenting it to the people that could benefit from it, because I got to go and present my data at UMDF 3 years in a row. So I really got to meet a lot of people in the mito space. Yeah, so I was very lucky.
So you really saw like every aspect of how, like specifically for mitochondrial disease, but like how it all works, like the research,
yes,
the families, you know, the nonprofit, all of it.
Yes, I got to see the whole spectrum, which was very nice. I think it's easy to forget what's going on behind the scenes sometimes. Like opposite, if you're just in the clinic all the time, you forget about the drug development and the therapy developments, and then vice versa. When you're in the lab all the time, sometimes you forget there are families and patients, you know, really hopeful and really relying on your work to hopefully make a difference in their lives.
Yeah.
So I find that having both perspectives has really given me a unique view of rare disease.
So I'm just curious, during your time at CHOP studying mitochondrial disease and doing all of this, what are some of the biggest takeaways or nuggets or, you know, areas of, you know, what could we hang our hat on possibly that could happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've never met a more driven group of individuals in any space I was in. So whether that be the clinical team, whether that be the patients and their families, and whether that be the people in the lab doing the research, every single one of them is driven for the same ultimate goal, and that's helping patients and making sure that they get the best outcome possible. I really haven't met anybody, again, anywhere in mito, whether it be the patients, the parents, the doctors, the researchers, none of them have ever given anything other than 150% in what they're doing. And I think you really can't fail with a team like that backing you.
Yeah. So. What's important too is like you were, it's very clear you were very inspired by them. And so hopefully even if you're not working in that clinic, you can be successful with everything you've taken in from them and hopefully create that fire for your contemporaries and then for those younger than you down the road. You know, you're going to do great things in the rare disease world. I hope you stick with Mito, but I know it's too soon to have that type of conversation, right? I hope
Mito will always hold a place in my heart, right. 100%.
I hope. Yeah. I hope.
I bring it up everywhere. I brought it up over the summer because I know like UMTF has, and I think Mito Action as well, has the like action plan, like the printouts for when you're in the emergency mm-hmm. room with Mito exactly. disease. And I was speaking with a advocacy organization, not about Mito, but they're also a rare disease. And mm-hmm. I was like, hey, Mito has this great method and they have printouts for families to bring to doctors to explain these diseases. So I try to sprinkle Mito aww. Wherever I go. So hopefully people at least hear about it at the very least.
Well, that's great. Creating awareness too, you know, for the organizations and how great mm-hmm. they are for the patients is huge. You've accomplished quite a lot as an undergrad and then as a grad student. It's really important to note something you've shared with me is that you're the first in your family to attend college. It's a big deal. So did you have their support? Could they get behind your passion for all of this?
Yeah, I think originally my parents didn't really want me to go away to college. They didn't go to college. They live in the same town that they were born and raised in. So in the same little town. Originally, they didn't see the point in me going away to college. They're like, why not just stay at a community college? You know, you could do part-time and work, things like that. They weren't necessarily against it, but they didn't understand my interest and my passion. And then as I went through undergrad, you know, I struggled. I was not a perfect student by any means. I had to retake a class my freshman year. I was like sobbing. I told my mom, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, oh, we'll just drop out my freshman year after my first semester in college. And I was like, just drop out. But then what am I going to do?
Wait,
like my dream
advice.
Is,
yeah,
my dream is genetic counseling. Yeah. Like I can't do that if I can't handle my intro chemistry course. Mm-hmm. And after that, I really worked hard and they're very proud of me. They're very supportive. They like to learn more about what I do. It's very nice. Again, they might not fully grasp what I do.
Right, right.
But they're very, you know, now they're very supportive and very excited to see me, you know, get that much closer to my dream job.
I'm sure they're so proud.
Yes, they definitely are. Like I said, it took a little bit, but
yeah, like there was fully like on a board. Disconnect. You know, they couldn't understand that what you wanted to do was so specialized and it couldn't happen at a community college or at a lot of universities nationwide. You know, you yes. had to go to a specific place.
Yeah, and I think genetic counseling is such a new field of study mm-hmm. too. That how could I expect them to understand that if most of the population doesn't right. understand or even know what genetic counseling is? Like, how can right. I expect them to know? So, yes, they have been very lovely. I'm very lucky that they support me in that way.
Yeah, yeah. So grad school is going to end this spring.
Yes.
Okay. So what will your degree officially be in? And what is your, you know, if you could create a perfect job for yourself, what would it look like?
Amazing question. Very, very on topic right now as I am actively applying for jobs. So I currently go to Kane University and I will graduate in May with my Master's of Science in Genetic Counseling.
Okay.
So after right on that, target. We yeah. have to pass right on target. Uh-huh. After that, we have to pass our board exam. And that is in August. So I have about 2 months between graduation and the board exam to really
hunker
study
down.
Up,
yeah.
hunker down. And once I pass the board exam, I will officially be certified genetic counselor and I can become licensed in whatever state I practice in if they have licensure requirements. In terms of my dream job, I really enjoy research. I obviously worked in a lab and did wet bench research for 3.5-4 years, but I also really enjoy clinical research. I'm very much enjoying my thesis and what I'm working on right now in terms of research with sibling support. I would really love, ideally, I would love a position that is in a specialized clinic that is rare disease or, again, just really specialized to a specific disease group to really provide support
mm-hmm.
that also has the opportunity for research on the side. I would love to do a combination of both in-person clinic as well as research, because I think that's really what drives everything that's done in clinic is the research going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And keeping your hand in both, I think, benefits the patient the most, right?
Yes, because then I can give them, not only can I give them the most up-to-date information, but I can be actively involved in pushing that
yeah.
and driving the change and driving the new opportunities for them. So I think I'd like to have a dual position where I could be able to do both, ideally.
Are there a lot of institutions around the country that operate like that?
There are.
Okay,
there are definitely a lot of ones out there. And I think even if I couldn't find that ideal position, I think it's important for people to remember that, you know, you can also create your own opportunities.
Sure.
So even if I can't get through that in my job, I could get through that in other ways or get that in other ways, whether it be working
grants.
With Mito Action
oh, yeah.
or where I get my own grants
yeah.
or whether I work and partner up with other advocacy organizations to write grants. I could do that external of my, you know, 9-to-5 job as well. So.
Right. Oh, you have so much energy.
I'm young.
Right. Not as young as you. And I do have mitochondrial disease. So that energy,
exactly.
I miss that level of energy that I had, you know, and it's really beautiful to see and that you wanna direct it in this way. You know, I didn't know anyone in my early 20s that was, you know, working to help families with rare disease. Like I didn't know a single person, you know, so to me as the patient, that's
yeah.
scary, you know, that, I mean, obviously yeah. I don't know everyone, but that
mm-hmm.
it's not common. So I
yeah.
want it to feel more common. And I want to meet people like you to feel good about the hope and the future of rare disease and hopefully ridding ourselves of it, right?
Yeah.
Or
and
helping.
I think the genetic counseling space breeds a very unique like set of personalities
mm-hmm.
and people that are passionate about that and that do have the unique skill set and drive to support patients and promote, you know, rare disease and their help. So I'm hopeful. Again, everybody I meet in the genetic counseling space is so passionate, is so driven, and is so smart and capable. I'm excited to see all of them enter the space as well. And hopefully the patients will benefit from that too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like to ask this question. I haven't moved forward. And so when I talk to a genetic counselor, whether it's on the podcast or just in my personal life, why after a defined diagnosis with no question, why would I continue going to a genetic counselor? This is the last question before we talk about this extremely
no,
unique
please.
Research you want to do. So what would it benefit me to go back to see a genetic counselor? I get confused. You know, I see
and
so many doctors.
I don't think
doctors.
That's an uncommon experience.
It
yes.
is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's part of a burden, too, is all of the doctors
yeah.
that patients have to see and adding another appointment
right.
onto their schedule that's already overwhelming. But I think genetic counselors are very uniquely trained to help out with not just the genetic side and the diagnosis side, but also the social aspect
mm-hmm.
and helping to support how this diagnosis is going to look in the future, right? You might go to your doctor once a year and they check you physically and
yeah.
check how you're doing physically diagnosis-wise. But genetic counselor can help check in terms of how are therapies progressing? How are treatments progressing?
Mm-hmm.
How are you progressing? How can they help support you in terms of your future planning? If you're planning to have children, if you're planning to make a big lifestyle change, can they connect you with a strong network
mm-hmm.
of other, you know, medical professionals in the space you plan to move? I think genetic counselors get training in mental health counseling as well as the sciences. And I think
oh, wow.
that gives them a very unique skill set to help with not only they can understand you from a rare disease genetics perspective, but they can understand you as a human being who needs support with a really difficult diagnosis and what could possibly be one of the hardest things in their life that they're dealing with.
Right.
So I think having a genetic counselor on your team that you can touch base with and that you can rely on is a gap that genetic counselors can fill in rare disease, is somebody that looks at you external of just the diagnosis, but also how to help support you as you navigate that diagnosis.
Okay. It's a very good answer. I need some motivation to make another appointment, you know, and to drive the 40 minutes and to fight the parking garage and all of those things. But I do think it's
worth the parking garage.
Right. I know it's important. My head knows that. My heart knows that. You know, it's making that connection, and I need to just get some more motivation. But
And we're not going anywhere. Yeah. We'll be here whenever you're ready.
You're so perfect for this role. I want to clone you. So let's dive into this research. Mm-hmm. I could listen to you talk about this for hours. I think that probably a lot of people listening could relate to the research you want to do and you know, publish down the road. Mm-hmm. I guess I shouldn't. The more I say, the more it's going to just go. Just tell us about it.
You're putting them on edge.
Right, don't know right, what it is right. Yet.
So I guess I'll actually lead up to it too a little bit. So I won't tell them quite yet. When I was in the mito space, not only did I fall in love with mito, but I also really fell in love with the psychosocial aspect. So how these diagnoses impact the family as a whole. So I helped out and transcribed some interviews with caretakers of patients with mitochondrial disease. So there was already a grant ongoing, and one of the genetic counselors there, Elizabeth McCormick, was very lovely and gracious and allowed me to help out on the project. So through watching those recordings of interviews of caretakers, you see the burden that that has on the caretaker, as well as the patient with mitochondrial disease. But I noticed that throughout a lot of the interviews, they kept on bringing up siblings. Oh, like my son has mitochondrial disease, but you know, we also have his sister, and it's so hard, you know, how that impacts the unaffected sibling. And when I got into grad school, you have to do a thesis project, and it can really be about whatever you're passionate about. And I took that as the perfect opportunity to really delve into this sibling space. So my thesis project is on the impact a pediatric genetic diagnosis has on the unaffected sibling of the patient. I think it's more commonly accepted now that, of course, the parents have a burden. There's higher anxiety, there's higher depression when their child is diagnosed with a genetic condition. But there's a large gap in research in how the siblings feel and how the siblings can possibly, you know, slip through the cracks as well. So my thesis was doing qualitative interviews with siblings of patients with a genetic condition, and it could be any genetic condition as long as the patient was diagnosed when the sibling was between 1 and 18 years old, so in their childhood, and how that kind of altered their childhood and what impact it may have had.
And the family home life.
Exactly. And I have had the opportunity to speak to so many very wonderful people. They were so kind, so open, so willing to share, you know, some difficult thoughts and some difficult situations where they love their sibling, they care deeply for their sibling, but there were difficulties where maybe they had misdiagnoses that went under the radar because their sibling required so much around-the-clock care. Or how their family planning decisions are altered based off of their sibling's diagnosis. So maybe they don't want to have children, or they have to do additional genetic testing to have children due to a genetic condition running in the family. A lot of them also mentioned the future expectation of them becoming the primary caregiver after their parents pass. So there is, you know, several different unique factors that impact siblings that don't necessarily impact the parents.
Right.
When it comes to a genetic condition. And I hope to, through this research, create some family-centered guidelines for genetic counseling where the sibling gets resources very early on and gets acknowledged very early on to hopefully lessen that impact on them.
hopefully if they're cared for mentally, emotionally, from the beginning, from the sibling's diagnosis, then they will be in a better place, even come adulthood when they do become the guardian. You know, the whole family, I think, could be a lot more harmonious, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think
if everyone's needs are met, and yeah, it's tough as a parent to have a child with a condition. And, you know, if you think about your energy and your time as a pie, they get more, a larger slice, you know, than if you were to have two typical children or three, typical children. I think there's also the idea of like there being pressure, I would think, on the non-diagnosed child to perform and succeed because they're the one, you know, that doesn't have the barrier, the obstacles in front of them. And that could be really daunting.
Absolutely. A lot of them brought that up where they didn't want to add more on their parents' already full plate. So they tried really hard in school. They tried to be as small as possible in their childhood.
Yeah.
And now that they're adults, they're kind of processing all of those feelings that happened when they were a kid. And they're like, wait, I did need support.
Yeah.
And I did need this care. A lot of them also talking about being parentified. So being the third parent.
Huh.
Once they were old enough to drive their sibling to doctor's appointments and old enough to help administer the medication.
Yeah.
Suddenly they have the responsibility of not only a sibling, but now they're also a step-in parent.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And that's not like a babysitter where like you're going over once a week and you know you can leave it. This is in your home. And that's tough.
Yes. It's a very unique experience. And I think a lot of these siblings were very open in sharing that they struggle in adulthood with feelings of resentment or feelings of anger at their sibling, at their parents, and how they are actively processing that now. And everybody does it so differently because they have all had such different experiences.
Right.
So, you know, it's hard to hear that they may have never spoken to a genetic counselor, or they didn't even know about their sibling's diagnosis until they researched it themselves, right? Like their parents didn't tell them, but they obviously knew that something was different.
Right,
they just didn't know what.
Or did they not tell them appropriately, but they, you know, were exposed to information. I remember you were telling me this the first time we spoke about like the exposure at doctor's appointments, that they were brought along at appointments and not really given clear understanding of what they were hearing, but knowing that, you know, they were being exposed to some pretty high level information.
And also, you know, sometimes at doctor's appointments, doctors don't always use the softest hand when delivering information, right? And that's for an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But think about as a 7-year-old or as a 10-year-old sitting and hearing, you know, your sibling's life expectancy, sitting and hearing your sibling may never talk or may never walk, hearing those kinds of things in a doctor's office while your parents are emotionally reacting. What do you do at that age? And how do you feel? Like the one sibling talked about going home and Googling all of the terms they heard in the doctor's office because they didn't know what it means.
That's so
they went
dangerous.
To bed at
them
night
just
and
doing
Googled.
It by themselves. Yeah.
And, you know, you can see some really disheartening information online. If you just Google a condition, you might only see the most severe cases, right? You might not see the broad spectrum of the condition. So they might Google something. They're like, you know, the life expectancy is 10 years. How do you deal with that information when you're alone in your bedroom Googling it?
Yeah.
So
how do you plan to further this research you've started, ideally?
Yeah, I think that's a great question.
We've talked about the type of research you want to do.
Yes.
But what will you do to research it?
Yeah, I think one of the first things I really want to do is help create some resources. So actual like pamphlets and actual handouts that can be used in the clinical setting. So now that I know where a lot of these pressure points are, where a lot of these main struggles that these kids went through are, I can help start to create some resources and hopefully start to actively implement them in clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And then see and hopefully be able to interview families and see, did those resources help? Are you following through with this?
Mm-hmm.
Is it helping? What are you missing that I can be there for? I also am very interested in working on creating a more pared down version of explaining diagnoses as the siblings get older. So if your sibling got diagnosed when you were 5, it's hard as a parent to explain a diagnosis when you're still processing the diagnosis yourself.
It's hard to explain a sinus infection to a 5-year-old.
Exactly. So having a genetic counselor that can really sit down with your child and help them work through the diagnosis at their level of understanding. And then when they're 7 and when they're 10 and when they're 12, having a genetic counselor that's there to provide age appropriate and correct information on a diagnosis that hopefully takes some of the fear and the burden off of the parent of having to explain this to their child.
Wow.
I think that's something I'm really interested in putting into practice and working with, you know, educators, you know, those that are in the education field and how to talk to children at that age about a genetic diagnosis. That's something I'm hoping to start to implement and practice.
Or even for those students studying to be genetic counselors, maybe for them to get the education while they're in school, you know, so they can use your resources and also be ready to help the families that, you know, this applies to when they're meeting with them in clinic, right?
Yes. I think we have all seen in our training this exact situation where a sibling comes in and they're sitting there for the hour and a half long appointment as we're taking all of this history and hearing all of these things. We've all seen it, but nobody really addresses it or addresses the sibling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's one thing to see it. It's another thing to really address it.
Yeah, yeah.
And bring it up and describe, what do you do? How can you include the sibling? How can you check in on the sibling?
Mm-hmm.
Should they be at these appointments? I know it's hard taking off of work and taking off of school. Is there a space that we can provide the siblings where they don't have to hear these difficult things and they might not be ready to or want to? So,
well, I think your future is so bright and I give you so much credit. You are going to a field that just seems so perfect for you and that needs you. I mean, this field could use more amazing people. It is not flooded, right? And I feel hopeful when I talk to someone like you who really is focused on rare disease. I would love to keep you in the Mito space. Obviously, I'm not an employer of any sort, so I don't have any ability to solidify that for you. But I really think no matter where you work, you will be such an asset. And the families that you work with are going to be so lucky to work with you and to benefit from your insight and from your empathy. And I just think you're so lovely. So I
thank you so much.
You are more than welcome. I know our listeners are going to really enjoy hearing the things you're saying. I'm sure a lot of it has resonated with them. And again, I hope it's also just a little nice to hear that someone young wants to go into the rare disease space, right? So
yes.
If I'm excited about that, I hope our listeners are excited about that, right?
So I hope so too.
Ryan, thank you so much for being on our podcast. It's been so wonderful to get to know you.
Yes. Thank you so much, Marcy. It was lovely. It's been an honor.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll have you back on in a year or two when your research is going and when you're hopefully working in the Mito space, you know, not to get ahead of myself or anything, right?
No, it'd be lovely to touch base again. It'd be great.
Well, you are always welcome on this show. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.